Hello. Welcome back to Faded Tales, everyone. This is the podcast where we talk about stories of animals that are fading. And that's why I called it Faded Tales. I hope you guys are doing wonderful after this reading week. I have been busy as hell before. I finally am back. And I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Sit back, relax, drink a cup of cocoa, and yeah, let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. So, I'm going to start off for you guys. This is going to be an animal you guys have probably never heard of before. In high in the mountains, where the air thins and sound carries differently, there's an animal most people will never see. It moves like a shadow along cliff faces, balanced on ledges that look impossible. Its spiral horns carving shapes against the sky. This is the marhor, Pakistan's national animal, a survivor, a symbol, and for a long time, a ghost slipping quietly towards extinction. Welcome back to Faded Tales, everyone.
Hi.
A podcast where animals whose stories are slipping from memory, not because they don't matter, but because the world moves too fast to notice them fading. That's what I was going to say. Today's story takes us into the steep mountains and deep valleys, into colonial hunting lodges and modern conservation meetings, into myth, money, and moral gray areas. It is a story of the wild goat that refuses to disappear and what its survival asks of us. Now, for many people, the marhor exists only as an image, a photograph in a textbook, a logo on a government seal, a dramatic silhouette of spiraling horns. And this is honestly true because in Pakistan, there's merch for the marhor everywhere. I literally own a shirt with the marhor on it, and it's beautiful. But seeing a marhor in the wild is something else entirely. They don't announce themselves. They don't linger in open valleys the way deers might. Instead, they emerge slowly, cautiously, often from places that a human eye struggles to focus on. Narrow ledges, fractured rock faces, slopes that look more like vertical walls than ground. A marhor is the largest wild goat species in the world. Adult males can exceed 100 kilograms. Their body is thick with muscle and insulated by a long, shaggy coats that grow heavier in winter. Their horns are their most striking feature, twisting upward into sharp ridges. No two sets of horns are exactly alike. Females, however, are smaller, more lightly built, with shorter horns and sleeker coats, but they are no less adept climbers. Kids are born nimble, learning almost immediately how to navigate the steep terrain, because hesitation in the mountains can be fatal. Marhor are not animals of spectacle. They're animals of precision. The word marhor comes from Persian and Pashto roots. It often translates as snake eater or snake horn. According to local folklore, marhor hunt and kill all snakes, and the foam sometimes is seen around their mouths is believed to neutralize venom. Some stories claim that a marhor's horns can be used to detect poison, or that their presence keeps snakes away entirely. Science tells us these stories aren't entirely true. But folklore isn't really about biology. It's about meaning. These myths reflect how people have long understood the marhor as a creature of power, danger, and protection. An animal that stands above threats, that dominates an unforgivable landscape. Long before conservation categories or population surveys, the marhor existed in story. And sometimes, story is the first form of prediction. Everything about the marhor's body is shaped by altitude. Their hooves are broad and flexible, with hard outer rims and soft rubbery centers that grip rocks and with astonishing stability. Their legs are powerful, but controlled. built not for speed across open plains, but for balance and explosive leaps. Their eyesight is keen, adapted to scanning vast distances for movement. Their hearing is sharp. Their sense of smell alerts them to predators long before the danger arrives. Marhor are primarily browsers. They feed on grasses, leaves, shrubs, herbs, and tree shoots. In forested zones, they strip bark and climb into lower branches to reach food. In winter, when snow covers much of their habitat, they rely on whatever vegetation remains accessible, often surviving on nutritionally poor forage that other animals couldn't endure. And they are crepuscular. I believe that's when they're most active at dawn and dusk. During the heat of the day, they rest on shaded slopes or high ledges, conserving energy. Males and females live separately for most of the year, forming same-sex groups. They come together during the rutting seasons in winter when the competition becomes intense. That competition is loud. When two mature males clash, the sounds of their horns colliding can echo across entire valleys, sharp, explosive, unmistakable. These battles establish dominance, determining who earns the right to breed. Despite their size and strength, Marhor are cautious animals. Their first response to danger is not aggression, but ascent. Upward is safety. In their native ecosystem, Marhor are not alone. Snow leopards are their most iconic predator, stalking them across the same cliffs and ridge lines. Wolves may target young or weakened individuals. Lynx and bears occasionally pose threats as well. This predator-prey relationship is ancient and balanced. Marhor vigilance helps shape predator behavior, while predators prevent overpopulation and keep herds healthy. When Marhor disappear, that balance collapses. And that when humans enter the equation, the rules change entirely. The Marhor's greatest population collapse did not come from natural predators. It came from people, obviously. During the 19th and early 20th century, British colonial officers and European elites traveled through the mountains of South Asia with rifles, porters, and guides. It's obviously the British. Big game hunting was not simply recreation. It was a performance of dominance over land and nature. Marhor, with their enormous horns and difficult terrain, became prized trophies. To kill one was to prove endurance, skill, and authority. Horns were shipped to Europe and mounted in estates and clubs. Hunting journals describe the animal as cunning, elusive, worthy prey, language that elevated the hunt while erasing the cost. At the same time, local communities faced upheaval. Traditional land was disrupted by new borders and laws. Firearms became more accessible, forests were logged, and livestock grazing expanded higher into the mountains, completely competing directly with Marhor for food. By the mid-20th century, Marhor populations had collapsed across much of their range. By the 1990s, estimates suggest fewer than 2,500 individuals remained in the wild, or worldwide, actually, in a sense. Some subspecies teetered on the edge of extinction. The ghost of the mountains was fading fast. The Marhor is not a single uniform animal. There are several recognized subspecies, each adapted to its own region. There's the Astro Marhor, found in northern Pakistan with broad, flaring horns. There's the Kashmir Marhor, with tighter spirals. And then there's the Suleiman Marhor, adapted to drier southern ranges. And there's also the Buhara Marhor, which ranges into Central Asia. Some of these populations fell to just a few hundred individuals. When a subspecies disappears, it takes unique genetic adaptations with it, traits shaped by centuries of survival in specific landscapes. Extinction does not happen at once. It happens piece by piece. When conservation efforts intensified in the late 20th century, they did not arrive as a simple rescue. Instead, they arrived as a compromise. In Pakistan, one of the most controversial wildlife management strategies in the world was introduced, community-based trophy hunting. Each year, a very limited number of older male mahar could be legally hunted by foreign hunters. Permits sold for enormous sums, sometimes exceeding $100,000. Crucially, most of the money went directly to local communities. The logic was economic but effective. If mahar were worth more alive than dead, people would protect them. And they did. Poaching declined, local guards monitored herds, habitat protection improved, mahar numbers rebounded dramatically in some regions. In 2015, the International Union of Conservation of Nature reclassified the mahar from endangered to near threatened. A success story, but an uneasy one, because it raises a haunting question. If an animal's survival depends on its price, what happens when that market disappears? Now, I'm going to go into the symbol and flag in reality a little bit. Now, in Pakistan, the mahar is a national symbol. It appears on emblems, uniforms, and insights, and it represents resilience, independence, and mastery of harsh terrain. But symbols can flatten living beings into ideas. For some communities, the mahar is a neighbor. For others, it's a source of income. For the state, it's proof that conservation can work. For the mahar, none of this exists. There is only food, danger, reproduction, and survival. Now, even if the mahar populations recover in certain regions, new threats are rising. There's climate change, our number one friend, it's reshaping the mountain ecosystems. Vegetation zones are shifting uphill, snow patterns are becoming unpredictable, droughts and extreme weather events stress both wildlife and human communities. As human development expands, roads, tourism, mining, mahar habitat to become increasingly fragmented. Adaption has limits, you know. The mountains are changing faster than evolution can respond. It's tempting to tell the mahar story as a victory, near extinction, recovery, hope, but the survival does not mean safety. The mahar's future depends on continued political will, ethical conservational choices, and climate action, and whether humans remain willing to protect something that offers no immediate return. Their story forces us to confront uncomfortable truths. Can conservation coexist with exploitation? Who decides which lives are worth saving? And what happens to animals that cannot be turned into symbols, trophies, or success stories? Before I end, I just kind of want to look a little bit more about the mahar, because I don't think you guys... the spelling of mahar... I learned this pronunciation from my parents, because my dad is Pakistani. It's a really unique animal, to be honest. But the English name... if you want to know, because I've been calling it mahar, because that's like what the general name is. But if you want like the English translation a little bit, I mentioned like snake eater and stuff, but it's also known as the screw horn goat. Let me look a little bit more about this. Oh yeah, it stands about 95 to 102 centimeters, which is around 37 to 40 inches. This is at the shoulders and has long up to 160 centimeters or 63 inches corkscrew shaped horns. I talked about most of the body type and stuff. I just want to get into the, it's near threatened now. That's true. In India, the mahar is fully protected Schedule 1 species under the Jammu and Kashmir's Wildlife Protection Act of 1978. In 1973, two reserves were established in Tajikistan, Dashingjum District Reserve with 49,000 acres, and the reserve and that also has another reserve that also has 130,000 acres. These reserves exist to protect it. it, and the regulations are poorly enforced, making poaching common. And though marmots still face ongoing threats, recent studies show that there's considerable success. This began in 1900s when a local hunter persuaded by a hunting tour to stop poaching marmots. The local hunter established a conservancy that inspired to a local examination. And so, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a recent thing that happened. May 2nd, 2024, I forgot about this. The United Nations General Assembly declared the 24th of May as International Day for the Marhoar, recognizing as an important species. So yeah, there's an International Day for the Marhoar, or it's May 24th, so it's coming up. It's gonna be a second one. Yeah, I was right about the name being derived by Persian language. It does mean snake eater. I'm just trying to find the hunting thing, if it was true. Yeah. Yeah, the Pakistani. I'm not surprised. Okay. Yeah, I'm not surprised the Pakistani government did this. The Pakistani government has been quite a handful for lately. But yeah, it is true that I just wanted to double check because I am like half asleep when I'm writing these scripts. The Pakistan hunting marhoar is legal as part of the conservation process. Expensive hunting licenses are available from Pakistani government that allow the hunting of old marhoars, which are no longer good for breeding purposes. But in India, the hunting is legal. Oh, but it is poached for food and for its homes, which are thought to be for medicinal purposes. Again. Yeah, so it is near threatened as of 2023. And according to this, it says there's 5,800 individuals left. So that's a good improvement a little bit. But yeah, of course the British have to deal with this, all this. Anyway, I just wanted to make this a bit longer just so I can like have it like longer. Because I always make my script short. I try to make it longer. It just never happens. And I guess I can play a sound for you guys of the marhoar. This is from like a BBC Asia. It's Day at Attenborough, but I just want to play the sound of the things clashing together.
Competing for the risk begins.
Yeah, that was the clash.
They risk their lives, competing for a higher position.
But yeah, you guys can look it up if you want. I'm just gonna try and find a better sound of it.
Just brace and take the hits.
Yeah, that's like the sound of like the horns going together. But yeah, if you guys want to look up it, the name should be of the marhoar should be in the description or the title. But if you want the spelling of the marhoar, it's marhor, one word. That is marhor, marhor. To be honest, when I first thought of this, like the meaning, and in Urdu, mar means like kill. So I don't know what a whore means. Mar means like kill. Yeah, or motto. Motto is like the killing. If I'm ready, it's M-A. Yeah, it means beating, like beat him. Beat him, beat him, beat him. But it can also mean like snake or serpent in some and things. I want to see what whore means in Urdu, just to see. Oh yeah, it means eater. Oh yeah, duh. Sorry, of course whore means eater, so it's like mar eater, like killer eater. I thought it was like killer eater, but mar can also mean snake in Urdu, I think. But it's kind of funny because like of course, hord means eater. Cause okay, if you don't know this, if you're not dizzy, there's a thing in, that like is common. Like you always say, like someone is like this. My family calls me a goshkor, which means meat lover or meat eater. So yeah. It's like a little thing that like is kind of funny. I should have known. But yeah, if you want to know the marhoar, more about the marhoar, you can look it up. And like, it's a really beautiful animal, to be honest. I love it. And it's kind of like, I'm glad I got to do this episode that I could do, like, whatever I want. I wanted to do this episode because it was, like, close to me because I had the shirt. I'm like, hey, why don't I just do the mod whore? Yeah. This is another short episode, guys. But, yeah, I guess I should read the outro now in my script. See, sometimes I go from, like, just saying random stuff and then focusing on the script. But anyway, let me get the music on for you guys. Yeah. So, well, somewhere in the mountains right now is a marhor, which is standing on the edge of a cliff, watching the valley below. It doesn't know it was once endangered. It doesn't know it represents a nation. And it doesn't know, it doesn't know that it survived the Empire's markets and near erasure. It only knows that rock beneath its hooves, the cold air in its lungs, the instinct to keep climbing. The Modhor has not vanished, but it still walks the edge. This has been Fated Tales, stories of animals we almost lost, the fragile features that still inhabit. This is Zoya signing off.